This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's great to see Ian swinging the bat well. He swung the bat, you know, well last night in his at bat. And look, we had great at bats in the eighth and the ninth. We had essentially five of the six outs are, you know, well hit baseballs and. Unfortunately, couldn't find holes on five of those balls, unfortunately, and that's a little frustrating, but yeah, it's good to get Ian hopefully swinging it well, and that's a big like plus for the offense going forward.
Steve Rosenbloom, Mike Esposito on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
That's us. I'm Steve Rosenbloom. You...
I'm Mike Esposito.
Look at that. Look how we solved our identity crisis right there. We are halfway through the Memorial Day massacre. We're here, ruining radio. We'll be here till 11, then Mark Grody will take over from 11 to 2:45, taking you up to the Cubs game. Cubs against the Brewers, big showdown. The season could be blown up. No. But it is important for a team
that's lost game
12
today.
Of 18 and is 3.5 games behind the Brewers. So if the Cubs were to sweep the Brewers, they would be back in first place.
Yes, 4-game series.
So it is possible. It's good to have a goal. We're going to go to the guest hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois. Michael Cerami joins us. He covers the Cubs for Bleacher Nation, and maybe he can identify whatever happened to Michael Busch. Hi, Michael.
Hi, guys. Michael Busch, we're going to need one of those milk carton ads taken out. Where's Michael Busch? No, I mean, I don't know if that's where you want to start, but he is certainly one of the guys that has been the most glaring absence since his hot starts of the season. But he's also in a little bit of a weird position for us to sort of analyze because he is still a rookie. On the flip side, he's an older rookie, and an older rookie that the Cubs, you know, traded pretty significant prospect capital to the Dodgers for over the winter and was handed the, you know, keys to first base. And I think that we're sort of, although I still believe in his talent, I mean, we've seen what he can do. At a certain point, if, for example, Pete Crow Armstrong is going to continue hitting like out of his mind at AAA, then the Cubs might be forced to bring PCA up, start Cody Bellinger at first base a little bit more often, eating into some of Michael Busch's playing time if he's not otherwise at first or DH. And that's especially true if Mike Talkman is going to continue to hit because you've got to still find ways to keep him in the lineup right now. He's been one of the only sort of consistent contributors offensively through most of the season. So, yeah, Michael Busch's, you know, offensive disappearance, the way the league has adjusted to him, has been disappointing, and it's taken a little bit longer than I think any of us hoped it would for him to come out of that.
Yeah, Michael, and this is not meant to be a slam on Mike Talkman at all, but he has been excellent for the Cubs. But when Mike Talkman is your best offensive player and you have the names that you have on this roster, that is not a good thing. They have struggled.
It's absolutely brutal. I mean, frankly, I think we actually lose sight of this sometimes too, is that there's probably ways where you can, if everyone was playing up to their typical levels, you can deploy Mike Talkman a little bit more selectively and probably get even better numbers out of him than the Cubs have, but they're forced to start him every day. He's their usual leadoff hitter versus right-handed pitching. I mean, they're forced into that because he's been so consistent. So I agree, because in a world where Cody Bellinger, Seiya Suzuki, and Ian Happ, and Michael Bush, frankly, are hitting, you know, Tauchman shouldn't have an everyday spot, but right now they need him to, and that is a little bit of a sobering reality.
Our guest is Michael Cirami. He runs Bleacher Nation. He covers the Cubs. We're talking Cubs baseball here on The Score. We're the home of the Cubs. You'll hear Cubs Brewers this afternoon. Justin Steele goes. The rotation, Justin Steele, Ben Brown, Shota, and then Jameson Taillon for the four-game series. I want to, before we get to Shota and the amazing things that he has done, let's start with Ben Brown. As a starter, and yet the trouble they've had at the back end of the bullpen, that is a thing that you bring that in at the end of the game, and I love that whole idea. So where are you on how they're handling Ben Brown, and where should he be?
Yeah, I think this is one of my favorite topics. I think right now the Cubs are doing what they have to do until Jordan Wicks is back in the rotation. Ben Brown is one of two obvious choices to be the starter. Hayden Wesneski would be the other, as Kyle Hendricks has been demoted to the bullpen. Jordan Wicks is making his way back. He's already made a rehab start at AAA. So when he does return, you can move Ben Brown back into the bullpen. You could get him on a regular bullpen schedule where he's used to throwing one inning at a time, maybe back-to-back days or even 3 days in a row. With his arm strength and youth, that shouldn't be entirely out of the question. Not the plan, but that's possible. And once you sort of get him set into that rhythm, I do think he should be and can be a candidate for late innings. I think the Cubs are going to stick with Hector Neris and his experience in that role for a little while longer. He has had some better outings after walking one to two guys every single time he stepped on the mound for the first 20 games of the season. I do think Ben Brown is an ideal late inning relief option for the Cubs, and that'll obviously help a lot because that's one of the areas where they've been lacking the most. And Brown's high octane stuff, he's a two-pitch pitcher. It really is a perfect fit for him there. So as soon as Jordan Wicks is back, I think the Cubs will move him back into the bullpen, get him on that schedule, and then start moving him up in the leverage order of operations.
Michael, we played the Craig Counsell sound from earlier in the road trip when they decided to skip Shota after Friday's rainout. He will now pitch Wednesday. He has clearly been the best pitcher on the Cubs, certainly in the major leagues at this point, if you look at stats. What did you think of the reasoning behind that, and do you favor what they did with Shota?
Sure. I mean, listen, was it disappointing? Yeah, but if the Cubs can get 29 starts of this quality, obviously no one's expecting that quite that much. He's not going to go down in the greatest season to ever have been pitched. If they can get 29 starts by giving him an extra day of rest occasionally or going skipping a start every now and then, I think that, you know, it's 2024 and we are all up to the realities of what that the importance of that, especially for a pitcher from Japan who is used to pitching on more rest than they are in the States. So this is his first season in the big leagues. Maybe eventually, maybe even this year, it'll slow down and it'll start going, you know, every 5 days like every other starter. But until then, if he's going to pitch this well with an additional day of rest or an additional start skip every now and then, I really don't see any way around it. Because it's clearly benefiting him and the Cubs. So I'm okay with it. It's also, frankly, more important for him to pitch against the Brewers than it was the Cardinals. So let's hope he ends up pitching really well, and then it all works out. Because like you guys said at the top, if the Cubs take four this week, they would be back in first place. So, you know, this is a pretty important series, especially because following this series, the Cubs are playing the Reds, the White Sox, and the Reds again. And those are all very beatable teams, all in the Midwest, either home games or near home. So I think this is a really good opportunity to make up some ground, starting with the team that they have to beat, and that helps to have your best pitcher go in that series.
We're talking Cubs on The Score with Michael Cirami, who runs Bleacher Nation, covers the Cubs for Bleacher Nation. And the 773 texter says, talking Cubs on a Monday-Saturday suckage is very apropos because they suck. Indeed, they do. So Jed hasn't been real. There hasn't been a whole lot of trade spasm in Jed, and he kept waiting, and I like the way my team is, and we need this. And so Seiya's been disappointed and disappointing and hurt, and Dansby's been disappointing and hurt, and all these guys have been disappointing and hurt. And I don't know if you would want to focus on the greatest disappointment in the Cubs or what does Jed need to trade for so they don't suck like this at the end of the season?
Sure. Putting some words in my mouth there. I think this is still a pretty talented team going through a hard stretch. But I think that I wrote this on Bleacher Nation over the weekend. You look around the diamond, and there's, despite a lot of players struggling at almost every position, there's not a lot of obvious areas to add. You're not going to fit, say, a Suzuki. You're not going to fit Cody Bellinger. In the outfield, maybe you could find ways to move Ian Happ and Mike Tauchman around. At first base, you could also have Cody Bellinger, PCAs, around for center field. Second base, Nico Horner, shortstop, Yancy Sonson. Third base, Chris Morel. All of a sudden, you go, well, wait a minute. Where can we even add to this team? Well, there is one position. It would be catcher. I think the Cubs catchers have, you know, been a – their struggles have been – hidden by the fact that the rest of the team is struggling, but the catcher position has been pretty disastrous, at least offensively, and frankly, on defense, it hasn't been fantastic, especially at managing the running game. I think teams haven't even quite gotten wise enough yet to how easy it is to run on the Cubs right now. So that's a problem, and that's an area where they can look to upgrade. Now, there was a player that I think makes a lot of sense, and his name is Danny Jensen. He's the catcher for the Blue Jays. He's having an out-of-his-mind offensive season in Toronto for a team that's looking like they might sell. And since he's on an expiring contract, a rental player, he's the type of player they might be more inclined to trade. And he's also a player the Cubs have shown interest in the past. There were some rumors a couple of years ago that the Blue Jays would look to trade him, and the Cubs were among the teams kicking the tires on that. So I'm hopeful that that is one of the areas the Cubs can upgrade throughout the season, and Jansen is one of the players that can help offensively immediately. Even if he were to start contributing almost half of what he has offensively, it'd be a significant upgrade over the Cubs catching tandem right now. And defensively, he's a really strong catcher as well, so it's a really good fit. The problem, as we all remember with Wilson Contreras a couple of years ago, is that trading catchers midseason is very difficult. It doesn't happen very often. It does happen, but it doesn't happen very often. Learning a new team, a new pitching staff, a whole new process. It just comes with, you know, significant hurdles that we as outsiders like to tend to overlook because you just want the bat in the lineup or the guy behind the plate. But there's a lot that goes into managing a pitching staff, and just switching teams midseason is a challenge.
Yeah.
So, If that is something that they want to do, you would almost hope that it would be something they do sooner than later to give them more time. However, Jed Hoyer is, you know, notoriously patient, and the Blue Jays aren't certain to be sellers yet. It's just looking that way. So I don't know if there's going to be the opportunity to make that sort of early trade. So that's the position you could add. That's a player they could look to target if it comes to it. But I don't think we should expect anything soon. For now, it's Jan Gomes and Miguel Amaya behind the plate.
Yeah, well, Ellie De La Cruz may hasten that. The Reds coming up as much as they are. That may happen.
Yeah, I think that we're going to see a lot of stolen bases. Hopefully, you know, some of the Cubs pitchers can continue picking off runners. They've had some good luck with that this year. And, you know, obviously that is a skill as well. So hopefully they can maintain that because, yes, when the Cubs face the Reds, the running game is going to be unleashed, and it could be pretty ugly. That could turn a lot of walks and singles and doubles, and from there, you know, just one more hit and a run scores. So I'm not looking forward to that, but I do hope the Cubs catchers can wake up a little bit, at least at the plate, because this offense could use the help.
Michael, talking about guys who are struggling, and Christopher Morel has been their best power guy this season in terms of home runs and RBIs, but Slumping of late. He's down around 200 in batting average. And I know we're not looking necessarily at batting average when you're talking about power guys. But as I mentioned, he's been cold. And I wanted to ask what you have seen from Morel as the season has progressed here. As Steve said, it's Memorial Day. We can now look at the standings. We can kind of assess the season as a whole. And Morel, with hot stretches, is now batting 202.
Sure. So Morel's probably the one guy on the team who's underlying statistics, like everything, and for what it's worth, before I even dive into this, you know, I don't think anyone should be anti-batting average. It still represents something important, and that's never going to change no matter how many analytics are introduced to the game, and we can better understand the game. Now, is batting average necessarily the best predictor of future success? No, but that's okay, and it's still not okay that he's hitting 202. So I'm not sidestepping that part of it. I will say that he is the one player on the team who's advanced analytics, everything under the hood, how hard he's hitting the ball, where on the bat he's hitting it, his launch angle, all of that is actually extremely positive. Like he and his, there's these new metrics out there for swing speed. He is up there with the elite of the elite. He's actually the one guy who's probably getting the most bad luck. The way he's actually performing, not the results, but his underlying performance is really strong. And the gap between his actual batting average and what Zach expects based on the way he's hitting the ball is huge. So I think he doesn't really need to change anything and just keep going. The ball will start to find some grass. But he's the only guy on the team where I really feel like that's the case. Suzuki has gone through stretches like that, but he still doesn't look himself at the plate and has uncomfortable plate appearances. Cody Bellinger, we think, will get back to producing, but hasn't really much lately. Morel is actually the guy who, you know, when he steps up, he's actually capable of making damage right now, and it's just about luck evening out. But unfortunately, again, he's the only guy on the team for whom I think you can actually say that.
Well, 847 texture says, how about bringing back David Ross as your backup catcher? So, yeah, he's got time. We're looking at that. Guy in charge of throwing people out. Michael, we will continue to debate this. We thank you for your insight. Good stuff. And thanks for joining us, giving us part of your holiday Monday.
Of course. Thanks for having me on. And let's see if the Cubs can go out there and get a win for us today.
Yeah, Shota says the Cubs are going to win today.
That's right.
Hey, Chicago. Thanks. Appreciate it, Michael. Michael Cirami. Bleacher Nation. He runs Bleacher Nation. He talks about the cut. All this cut. I know we were going to do the earworm. I'll get to the earworm. We will get to the earworm. But all this catcher stuff reminded me of something that is far more entertaining than Cubs baseball. And I recommend it. And you actually got a piece of, you know, a tangent of the baseball connection to baseball history last night with David Cohn in the booth. And so we're talking about catchers. I want to bring that back, and I will give a viewer recommendation because I am the world's greatest viewer influencer as well as the greatest influencer of burnt ends.
Yes. I am. Yes, you are.
I am, yeah, because you know what? Big Ed's. I know. That's it. That's the greatest. So we'll take a break. We come back, and we will discuss this. A wonderful documentary and a connection to what you heard last night. And we're talking about catchers and everything is everything. It was all there. It may not be the flying chonklas. I did that Saturday. Do you know what a chonkla is?
I don't.
Oh my God.
I was going to say, what's a chonkla?
You missed. Oh, well, we'll have to discuss that later too. Steve Rosenblum, Mike Esposito, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Steve Rosenblum. Mike Esposito on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Now he's just playing the hits for you, I think.
Greatest licks.
I know. He's
doing
it.
Rock history. Rebel, rebel. David. Welcome and welcome back. Steve Rosenblum, Mike Esposito. We're here on your Memorial Day. Thank you for making us a part of your Memorial Day. Respectful Memorial Day. Our gratitude goes out to people who gave their lives, who served in the United States Army, Navy, all the armed forces, gave their lives, gave their time, gave their service to the country to keep our freedoms as they are. Thank you. So a respectful Memorial Day to everyone. Last night when the Cubs finally got underway, and on the broadcast, you had Carl Ravitch and Eduardo Perez and Buster Olney and David Cohn. So when I read this earlier in the week, I think it was Jeff Agrest in the Sun-Times. He does a remote patrol thing, and it was like, the Cubs were on every national broadcast.
Yes, they were.
The Cubs, Cardinals. And the score, of course, we are the score.
We are your local home.
The right only here. Local yep. broadcast of Cubs, Cardinals, much to everyone's chagrin because the Cubs still haven't won a game. Anyways, last night's game. All of a sudden, I see David Cohn, and like 2 days earlier, I had seen, I'm late coming to this documentary, but all this previous talk about catchers and catching and throwing, it's called It Ain't Over. Did you see it?
I have not.
It's the Yogi Berra doc.
Is this the one that his granddaughter did?
Indeed, I knew Lindsay.
Okay.
I know Lindsay.
Okay.
Lindsay produced it. She's the first voice you hear. They just pants baseball. They embarrass baseball in the opening scene. They go back to the 2015 All-Star Game in Cincinnati, and they announce, the big voice announcer says, coming onto the field, the four greatest living baseball players. Welcome Henry Aaron, Willie Mays, Sandy Koufax, and Johnny Bench. Of course, that goes over real well in
Cincinnati, sure.
Not only is Johnny Bench not one of the four greatest ball players, four greatest living ex-ball players, whatever you want to say. He's not even the greatest living catcher at that time.
Because Yogi was still alive.
Yogi was better than all of them. Yogi had, the opening scene is Lindsay saying that she's watching this spectacle with her grandfather, Yogi Berra.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, the four greatest living, and she turns to him and goes, are you dead? And he says, not yet. He'd count his World Series rings and then add up all the World Series rings of Aaron, Bench, Mays, and Koufax. And guess what? Yogi's hands got more.
Yeah. 12? Do I have that right?
11.
11?
I mean, player. And they didn't. And the documentary tells you, shows you, explains to you, told by teammates and everybody around baseball, how really criminally under-respected Yogi Berra is because he was such a character.
Uh-huh.
And he was a cartoon character. In fact, Yogi, they tried to sue Hanna-Barbera for the Yogi Berra, for the Yogi Bear cartoon.
Yep.
And the judge threw it out because he'd never registered or copyrighted or he'd never trademarked Yogi. Because he was legally known as Lawrence Berra. And the documentary is spectacular. In this documentary, you can't tell a Yogi Berra story without two World Series moments, a minimum of two World Series moments, right?
Okay.
One is Jackie Robinson stealing home.
Jackie Robinson, yep.
And
I figured that one.
To his death, apparently, Jackie was out. He was out. And people who wanted to rile him up would say, Jackie was safe. And they would. And he was out. The one thing that got this cartoon character, this man who said it ain't over till it's over, and there's some debate about whether he really said that, but a later generation would know Yogi and all the Yogi-isms in the Aflac commercial.
Yes. I was just going to say, was it Geico? No, it was Aflac.
Aflac.
That was hilarious.
Right.
Yes.
And what's Aflac? What is that, Yogi? Well, that's the insurance you got to have if you don't have it. Right? But
yes.
The end of it is the best. And they give you cash. Which is just as good as money.
Yes.
And it's spectacular. It's a Yogiism, and it's wonderfully done.
Yes.
The other World Series moment, he caught the only perfect game in World Series history.
Don Larson.
And do you remember there's a famous scene where Yogi jumps into Don Larson's. Don Larson was like 6'4", 6'6".
Uh-huh.
And Yogi's 5'8".
Yep.
And he jumps after the perfect game is completed, the only perfect game in World Series history, he jumps into Don Larson's arms.
Yep.
So this thing goes through the spat with Steinbrenner and how he hates George Steinbrenner because of the way Steinbrenner fired him and gutlessly didn't fire him, made Clyde King do it. And Yogi says, I'm never going back to the stadium as long as Steinbrenner's alive. Till he apologizes. Took 14 years. And it was brokered by Susan Waldman, who's been a guest on the show. They have the date that Yogi and George apologize. The opening of the Yogi Berra Museum in Jersey is the day everything gets patched up.
Mm-hmm.
George is there. Yogi's there. Susan Waldman is hosting this show. It's a live broadcast with Yogi and George there, not having said anything. And Susan Waldman says, Yogi, this is George. George, have you met Yogi? It's great. So the repairing of relations gets to the point where it's Yogi Berra Day in the Bronx. At Yankee Stadium, where Yogi won all those World Series.
Yep.
More than all those four great players walking out onto the field. He's catching the ceremonial first pitch. Being thrown out by?
David Cone.
No!
Don Larson.
Don Larson.
That's amazing. I did not know that.
But David Cone was starting that day.
Oh, okay. So
for the Yankees.
I'm looking for the tie-in. There you go.
The catcher was Joe Girardi. Joe Girardi is in the documentary. Joe Girardi that day when Yogi goes out to catch the first pitch, they said, do you want the small mitt? He goes, hell no, I don't want the small mitt. So Joe Girardi says, would you bless my mitt by taking it out to catch the first pitch? And Yogi says, yeah. So he takes Joe Girardi's gamer.
Nice.
He catches the ball. Don Larson. He did not. Everybody was rooting for him to jump into Don Larson's arms again, right? They come off the field. Yankees go out there to play the game. So to cut to the chase, this is when David Cone throws a perfect game.
No way.
Way.
On Yogi Berra Day.
First pitch being thrown out by the guy who threw the only perfect game, a Yankees pitcher threw the only perfect game.
I did not know that.
They cut to Jeter, and he goes, I do believe there are ghosts in Yankee Stadium. Strange things happen. On Yogi Berra Day, with a perfect pitcher, the perfect game thrown by the imperfect man, as Don Larson was described, he throws out the pitch, Yogi Berra catches it, and then Joe Girardi catches a perfect game, having the glove that Yogi used to catch it, from David Cone in all those arm slots, and there's David Cone on my TV last night, and that's what started all this.
This is two things completely unrelated, one of them's completely unrelated to that, but to the whole Yankee Stadium thing. Number one, and I keep thinking this, and I just saw this recently, which I had forgotten, but then Yogi and Joe Garagiola were best friends growing up in St. Louis. Did you know that?
Yes.
I knew it, but I kind of had forgotten it. That blew my mind, that fun baseball fact. And number two, and I believe this is correct, didn't David Wells' perfect game came
no-hitter
on a day, or a no-hitter on a day when he wore Babe Ruth's hat or his jersey or something?
Do I have that correct? He was hungover.
Exactly.
He went all Doc Ellis. Yeah.
But it was the same type of like Yankee Stadium thing. And I'm not a Yankees fan. I just think it's cool that it's a very baseball-y fun thing.
I remember I never put this together, even though I had interviewed Girardi and found out from Girardi that when there is a no-hitter, perfect game thrown in Yankee Stadium, a Yankee pitcher throws a no-hitter, the pitcher gets the pitching mound, gets the rubber, not the mound, gets the rubber.
Yep.
The catcher gets home plate.
No kidding.
No lie. Ask Joe Girardi. He'll be on your broadcast. Joe Girardi has, I want to say, two home plates. I think he caught Wells' no-hitter. He caught Cone's perfect game. And I think he has two home plates from Yankee Stadium.
That's amazing.
That's what the Yankees give the catcher for that accomplishment. And a texter, 312, Steve, just because he has more rings than Willie Mays doesn't make him a better player. If you believe that, you don't know baseball. I've said on this on these airwaves for 30 years, Willie Mays is the greatest ball player ever.
I would agree with that.
You're listening to the point. The four greatest living ball players, and Yogi Berra wasn't out there when he won three MVPs. We can look up Mays and Koufax and Bench and Aaron and see how many each of those guys won. And he won more World Series than everybody out there together. And he almost never struck out. And I'm telling you, you overlook what he did at the most demanding of positions and the way he would especially clutch, especially late. And I'm a Willie Mays fan. You don't think the Yogi Berra deserves to be out there? You don't know baseball, Texter. Anyways, that was the story. It all came, and I recommend.
That's a great story.
And I recommend It Ain't Over. And our Saturday Suckage legend, Bob Costas, who's part of the roll call.
Yeah, I love it.
Naturally, you'd be interviewed because Yogi and Joe Garagiola, they grew up on the Hill
yep.
in St. Louis, and Costas and all the St. Louis ties. And there are cookies at the end of this from everyone that they interviewed, former Yankee teammates and other players and everybody else involved in this, including, and there's Billy Crystal, of course, because you can't have a
naturally
you can't have a Yankees you can't have a Yankees doc and not have Billy Crystal. Same, you can't have a Yankees doc and not have Bob Costas. Anyways, there are cookies at the end, so stick around to the end of it. It's well done.
Where is this on Netflix?
On Netflix, yeah.
Okay,
and it's 2 hours of your time that'll be very worthwhile. And I learned stuff. It was very, very illuminating. And again, I came away. I knew baseball. I know Yogi Berra, and I had a whole new respect for what this is. A guy who bridged from DiMaggio's Yankees.
I just pulled up his
Mickey Mantle's Yankees.
Yeah, I just pulled up his baseball reference. So he came up at 21 in 1946 to the Yankees. He played for the Yankees for 17, 18 seasons consecutively, was an all-star. I'm not going to count, but I'm literally telling you it's every year except for his first year. He was an all-star for the American League. Three-time MVP, as you mentioned, World Series. I don't have that here, but you 11-time World Series champion and a career WAR of 59.5. That's pretty good.
It's a nice career. Yeah. All right.
It's a nice career.
I just, the way it all tied in, if you're watching the Cubs-Cardinals game last night, there's David Cohn like, oh, this goes so many different places. So many different places is where we'd like to send Pedro Grifol to. We had a texter suggest vote for Pedro to be fired. And has he been fired yet? Do we know? Has he been fired yet?
No update. So Pedro Grifol is still the interim manager for the White Sox.
All right. And has Mitch brought us the bear claws? Bear claws.
Sadly, no bear claws.
We are much like the White Sox lineup. We are 0-2 so far on that.
We're over everything.
A few texts before we go to break. Nick and Palatine, appreciate this. Great to hear you guys on a Monday. Espo has been doing a good job on Cubs Radio. It's not his show, but he's on that show. I am the Dick Duran of Cubs Radio, and I'm happy to be there. Thank you, Nick and Palatine. And this made me laugh from the 847. The fifth greatest living ball player, not the four, but the fifth greatest living ball player is whoever starts today against the White Sox.
Okay, there you go. That'll get us right to Pedro Grifol, or Pedro Grifraud, as we're now calling him because we're radio losers. And we will explain to you why he's a fraud. Steve Rosenblum, Mike Esposito, thanks for spending Memorial Day with us. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Steve Rosenblum. Mike Esposito on Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
That's us. I'm Steve Rosenblum.
And I'm Mike Esposito, and I didn't know you wanted me to say my name, but
yeah,
there we are.
Did. Yeah,
just we're so taking you know care are. Of business,
yeah,
damn it.
Yeah, taking care of business.
The White for... Sox aren't, though.
No, they're not! Tyler Ferengul. All right, here's the deal. The White Sox nearly got no hit. Garrett Crochet gave him a quality start. Didn't matter. The White Sox nearly got no hit. They lost a four-game series at home to the Baltimore Orioles. And Pedro Grifol is like, okay, well, he had something to say. So here's his postgame.
I don't have much. Crochet pitches ass off. We got no hit through eight. We had a pinch hitter break it up. The rest of the guys, not the rest of the guys, most of the guys were flat today. Unacceptable. That's all I got.
When you say flat?
Flat. Period. Major league game. Got to respect it. Pretty simple.
Pedro Grifol, there's your interim White Sox manager. He's still the manager, Tyler? Do we have any word that he's been fired?
Pedro Grifol, as of right now, is still the White Sox interim manager.
So you heard him do something very uncharacteristic. Normally, he says stupid things trying to defend his players. And you know it's BS. And he even admitted last week, because he did the whole Benintendi bend over forwards, backwards, to just... Benintendi's the worst player in baseball, and Grifol's calling him a pillar of the lineup, and he's banging on Dominic Fletcher because, well, Dominic Fletcher doesn't suck as much as Andrew Benintendi, but he's got to prove himself.
He's a rookie.
And he sounds like Southside Mike Quatty. We're going to pick, I'm manager of the, I'm going to be tough on the young kids, but not the veterans, because you're supposed to fall on their grenade. And what happens is you sound stupid. And we went through a spate, and we could still do it. There's a dumb thing a week that Pedro Grifol says. There is. And that's the way. So all of a sudden, yesterday, after they almost get no hit, they don't get a win. They lose a four-game series to the Orioles at home.
Being swept.
He says they're come out bleeping flat. Now, this is the guy. This is the manager, remember. On the day he was hired, and I think it was Comcast Sportsnet Chicago, where he said, I guarantee you we're going to come out every night, and we're going to be ready to kick your ass.
At 7:10.
Whether or not he gave the time, that was the point.
Yes,
right?
I know.
So isn't he in charge of making sure his team is ready to go out there and kick your ass?
Well, this is apparently the time where he has decided, or he did decide, whether he knew it or not, he decided yesterday that I'm not going to protect these guys anymore, or I'm just, you know, the consider the gloves off partially on. And you look at the lineup that he trotted out though yesterday. I don't see more than one or maybe two guys that will be on this team 2 years from now. And I don't know what you think about Andrew Vaughn, who's having a terrible season, by the way, but he's a one of them. Sheets, maybe. Corey Lee, we talked about the catcher. But, I mean, the rest of the guys that played yesterday, excepting Crochet, who pitched amazing. You said it was a quality start, which it was. Six innings, 11 strikeouts. He gave up a two-run homer, and that's it. A total of three hits. That's a great start, right? In this baseball, in this day and age of baseball, that is a phenomenal start.
Well, he finally said something different than this usual stupid stuff Pedro Grifol did. And Ozzie Guillen on the Comcast Sportsnet Chicago postgame, NBC Sports Chicago, I'm sorry, NBC Sports Chicago, with Chuck Garfine, loved it.
I don't want to take anything away from Bradish because he threw the ball very well.
Yeah, Bradish.
But, Bradish, Pedro, 216 games take you to say what you feel. I love it. Love it. Why? Because you are a human being. You are eating up all the stress to yourself, and you let the people you're protecting, the guys. You have to.
Your players.
You have to protect your players. Some people have different ways to do it. But finally, he says something come up to be a stand up Southsiders. Yes, stand up. Now you have to, the Southsider, you are a Southsider, and you are a White Sox player, stand up.
Yeah.
First time I see Pedro saying the right thing. Don't go around people, protecting people, lying to fans just to protect your player. I love what you did, Pedro.
That's Ozzy. Okay, he loves what he did. Well, here's the problem.
You've lied to everybody, and you've come off looking like a schmuck so often with what you've said. Why would anybody believe this now? Why would you have any credibility? You don't. I don't think he has any credibility. And now you have reporters doing their job. Here's what the manager said. Goes, and they go into the locker room and they find, well, the catcher, Corey Lee, young catcher. But he was there, and they went back and well, they went back to find somebody, and they found Corey Lee. And here's what do you think of what Pedro Grifol said, and here's what Corey Lee said.
Pedro said the team was effing flat. You didn't use effing. What would you agree with that statement?
I'm going to let him comment on his statement, and he's going to feel that way, and obviously we're going to have a different feeling. He's entitled to his own opinion, and we are also, and I think it's a valid reason. It's not nothing to hide about that, but like I said, he has his opinions, and other people are going to have their opinions.
Corey Lee, young catcher, handled it very well, and catchers just naturally should be leaders, and he sounds like a pretty good one in training, and he gives me reason to think your clubhouse is in trouble. That they know this guy's a fraud. They know the manager is full of BS. And even though he tried to protect him, and then he goes off like this, he has no credibility.
Yeah, I think the analogy to Quadi is a great one, because the whole world knows that whenever the White Sox get themselves out of this and are contenders again, that he will not be around.
I mean, he won't even be allowed to watch their games.
As we continue the Pedro watch, Tyler just reported several minutes ago that he is still the interim manager of the White Sox. But it's almost 10, so maybe, I don't know, I doubt it. But no, I mean, in all seriousness, you know that when the Sox are a good team again, he will not be here. Just like you knew
so
with Quadi.
The sooner they fire him.
All due respect to Quadi. You knew, covering that team,
that's true.
As soon as the Cubs were contending, he would not be there. You knew it.
All right. We'll leave this where it is. We'll just leave it right there on the doorstep, and somebody else can clean it up. I'm Steve Rosenblum. He's Mike Esposito. When we come back, we will talk Bears. Bear Claw.
Bears.
Did Mitch Rosen bring the Bear Claws?
We're still waiting on that.
We're still waiting, yep.
Okay, we're not going to do any more radio until he brings them back.
We're on strike for Bear Claws.
Yeah, we're not going to. This is voluntary, right? OTAs? We got, no, if Darnell Wright doesn't have show, Montez Sweat.
Keenan Allen.
Yep, Bear Claws. What about this, not showing up at OTAs? You know what? Let's ask Alex Shapiro, NBC Sports 5, NBC Sports Chicago, covers the Bears. Guys who aren't there, as well as guys who are there. We'll talk some Bears next. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're going to work every day as hard as we can possibly can to kick your ass at 710.
Steve Rosenblum. Mike Esposito on Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
That's us. I'm Steve Rosenblum.
And I'm Mike Esposito, and I didn't know you wanted me to say my name, but
yeah,
there we are.
Did. Yeah, just
we're
so you
taking
know
care of business,
yeah,
damn it.
Yeah, taking care of business.
The White Sox aren't, though.
No, they're not! Tyler Fearngill. All right, here's the deal. The White Sox nearly got no hit. Garrett Crochet gave him a quality start. Didn't matter. The White Sox nearly got no hit. They lost a four-game series at home to the Baltimore Orioles. And Pedro Grifol is like, okay, well, he had something to say, so here's his post game.
I don't have much. Crochet pitched his ass off. We got no hit through eight. We had a pinch hitter break it up. Most of the guys were flat today, unacceptable. That's all I got.
When you say flat?
Flat. Period. Major league game. Got to respect it. Pretty simple.
Pedro Grifol, there's your interim White Sox manager. He's still the manager, Tyler? Do we have any word that he's been fired?
Pedro Grifol, as of right now, is still the White Sox interim manager.
So you heard him do something very uncharacteristic. Normally, he says stupid things trying to defend his players. and you know it's BS, and he even admitted last week, because he did the whole Benintendi bend over forwards, backwards, to just, Benintendi's the worst player in baseball, and Grifol's calling him a pillar of the lineup, and he's banging on Dominic Fletcher because, well, Dominic Fletcher doesn't suck as much as Andrew Benintendi, but he's got to prove himself.
He's a rookie.
And he sounds like Southside Mike Quatty. I'm manager of the, I'm going to be tough on the young kids, but not the veterans, because you're supposed to fall on their grenade. And what happens is you sound stupid. And we went through a spate, and we could still do it. There's a dumb thing a week that Pedro Grifol says. There is. And that's the way. So all of a sudden, yesterday, after they almost get no hit, they don't get a win. They lose a four-game series to the Orioles at home.
Being swept.
And it says they're come out bleeping flat. Now, this is the guy. This is the manager, remember. On the day he was hired, and I think it was Comcast Sportsnet Chicago, where he said, I guarantee you we're going to come out every night, and we're going to be ready to kick your ass.
At 7:10.
Whether or not he gave the time, that was the point.
Yes,
right?
I know.
So isn't he in charge of making sure his team is ready to go out there and kick your ass?
Well, this is apparently the time where he has decided, or he did decide, whether he knew it or not, he decided yesterday that I'm not going to protect these guys anymore, or I'm just, you know, the consider the gloves off partially on, and you look at the lineup that he trotted out, though, yesterday. I don't see more than one or maybe two guys that will be on this team 2 years from now. And I don't know what you think about Andrew Vaughn, who's having a terrible season, by the way, but he's a one of them. Sheets, maybe. Corey Lee, we talked about, the catcher. But, I mean, the rest of the guys that played yesterday, excepting Crochet, who pitched amazing. You said it was a quality start, which it was. 6 innings, 11 strikeouts. He gave up a 2-run homer, and that's it. A total of 3 hits. That's a great start, right? In this baseball, in this day and age of baseball, that is a phenomenal start.
Well, he finally said something different than this usual stupid stuff Pedro Grifol did. And Ozzie Guillen on the Comcast Sportsnet Chicago postgame, NBC Sports Chicago, I'm sorry, NBC Sports Chicago with Chuck Garfine, loved it.
I'm not going to take anything away from Bradish because he threw the ball very well.
Yeah, Bradish.
But, Bradish, Pedro, 216 games take you to say what you feel. I love it. Love it. Why? Because you are a human being. You are eating up all the stress to yourself, and you let the people you're protecting, the guys. You have to.
Protect your players.
You have to protect your players. Some people have different ways to do it. But finally, he says something come up to be stand up Southsiders. Yes, stand up. Now you have to, the Southsider, you are a Southsider and you are a White Sox player, stand up.
Yeah.
First time I see Pedro saying the right thing. Don't go around people, protecting people, lying to fans just to protect his player. I love what you did, Pedro.
That's Ozzie. Okay, he loves what he did. Well, here's the problem. You've lied to everybody, and you've come off looking like a schmuck so often with what you've said. Why would anybody believe this now? Why would you have any credibility? You don't. I don't think he has any credibility. And now you have reporters doing their job. Here's what the manager said. Goes, and they go into the locker room, and they find, well, the catcher, Corey Lee, young catcher. But he was there, and they went back and forth. Well, they went back to find somebody, and they found Corey Lee. And here's, what do you think of what Pedro Grifol said? And here's what Corey Lee said.
Andrew said the team was effing flat. You didn't use effing. What would you agree with that statement?
I'm going to let him comment on his statement, and he's going to feel that way. And obviously, we're going to have a different feeling. He's entitled to his own opinion, and we are also. And I think it's a valid reason. It's nothing to hide about that, but like I said, he has his opinions, and other people are going to have their opinions.
Corey Lee, young catcher, handled it very well, and catchers just naturally should be leaders, and he sounds like a pretty good one in training, and he gives me reason to think your clubhouse is in trouble. That they know this guy's a fraud. They know the manager is full of BS, and even though he tried to protect him and then he goes off like this, he has no credibility.
Yeah, I think the analogy to Quadi is a great one, because the whole world knows that whenever the White Sox get themselves out of this and are contenders again, that he will not be around. I mean,
he won't even be allowed to watch their games.
As we continue the Pedro watch, Tyler just reported several minutes ago that he is still the interim manager of the White Sox. But it's almost 10, so maybe, I don't know, I doubt it. But no, I mean, in all seriousness, you know that when the Sox are a good team again, he will not be here. Just like you knew with Quadi.
The sooner they fire him.
All due respect to Quadi. You knew, covering that team,
that's true,
as soon as the Cubs were contending, he would not be there. You knew it.
All right. We'll leave this where it is. We'll just leave it right there on the doorstep, and somebody else can clean it up. I'm Steve Rosenblum. He's Mike Esposito. When we come back, we will talk Bears. Bear Claw.
Bears.
Did Mitch Rosen bring the Bear Claws?
We're still waiting on that.
We're still waiting, yep.
Okay, we're not going to do any more radio until he brings them back.
We're on strike for Bear Claws.
Yeah, we're not going to. This is voluntary, right? OTAs? We got, no, if Darnell Wright doesn't have show, Montez Sweat.
Keenan Allen.
Get Bear Claws. What about this, not showing up at OTAs? You know what? Let's ask Alex Shapiro, NBC Sports 5, NBC Sports Chicago, covers the Bears. Guys who aren't there, as well as guys who are there. We'll talk some Bears next. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're going to work every day as hard as we can possibly can to kick your ass at 710.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.